Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Minds of Media. My name is Blake Panashevitz, and today's guest is a United States veteran, podcaster, and professional broadcaster who has worked at six Dota Internationals. Please let me introduce Austin Walsh, maybe better known as Cap. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, this should be fun. I'm excited to get you on here and delve more into your life. Some stuff that you haven't talked about. My goal whenever I do these is try to ask you questions you haven't been asked so we can get something, different. So that's like my entire point of doing this. So I'm excited to have you on. You're also my first Dota guy. So thank you for breaking that. I've had CSGO, League of Legends, Overwatch. You're the first Dota. So it's kind of exciting to finally do that.
So can I start by asking you a question? You seem to be pretty well acquainted with how much Dota do you watch?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Not a lot. I do a lot of research, or I try to, so that way when I have people on here, I don't look stupid. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, you already touched on a subject that most interviewers don't touch on at all, which is being a veteran and stuff. Because like for the last like 5 or 6 years of my career, I haven't said like hardly anything about that. I used to reference it when I first started casting, and then I quickly realized that it wasn't like, you know, because like at the time I was like 23, 22, you know, something like that. Like I was still in the reserves and stuff like that. And it's one of my life experiences, right? So I wasn't like overly referencing it or anything, but like much like people would reference a story in college or something, you know, it's like that's just the life experience I have. So
yeah. Thank you so much for your service, by the way. Normally that is one of the first things to start off with my veteran. So I do thank you for that for.
You know. Thank you for your support in general. I know it's I always feel weird when people thank me.
I know. Most of my family is military. So like my mom was military, my dad was military, my grandfather was military. I wanted to join military and they wouldn't let me because I chopped off my fingers in a snowblower. And they were they were like, oh no, you stuck your hand in a snowblower. Why would we ever let you in? Right? Like, no, it's because of like missing digits. There's a cross off point where like, if you lose so much of like my middle digit, it was cut too far. If it would have been a little bit higher, they would have let me. And they were like, no, we don't need anyone right now. You've lost too much finger. So I completely understand that. I like to start the show fairly easy with the questions before I get into like the hard hitting ones. So one of the things about you is that you are at least somewhat of a tea connoisseur. You like black tea. do you have like how deep do we go into like the delving into teas? Because you've definitely traveled the world. So I imagine that you've had a lot of good teas if you wanted them.
I wouldn't say that like I'm an expert by any means. I know how to I know what I like basically at this point.
What do you like?
I actually just got this this new tea that I've been having. It's by the brand called Kuzmi, or I presume it's Kuzmi. They're French, right? Okay. And their flavor of is it Prince Vladimir? I think is the name.
Of the flavor.
Yeah, it's like all their teas are named after like some
terrible, some famous like dictator.
something like that.
Killed a lot of people.
No, it wasn't Prince Vladimir, but I'll find it eventually. But basically it has hints of caramel.
Really?
Which is black tea with hints of caramel.
Oh, that sounds
it's really
good.
Nice. Yeah, it's great. I shared it when the last LAN event I went to, which was WePlay. We have a guy who's literally called Tea Governor. So as you can imagine, he's British as well. So he quite likes a good cup of tea. And I shared that with him and he very much liked it. So, I know what I like. I typically stick to what I like. I'm
like
one of those
tea?
People.
I know, you said black, but do you do like tea with like milk? Or honey, like do you do that? I like milk and honey in mine.
So if I do like the British teas or the Earl Grey, then maybe I'll do like milk and honey. But typically nowadays, no, not when I have something that's like has a flavoring to it, like the caramel tea, something like that. Then no.
Awesome. So I guess
St. Petersburg. That's what it is.
St. Petersburg. Oh, that's a much better name. I'm just going to throw that out there. The two names you could choose from. Prince Vlad. Yeah,
citrus fruits. Let's see. Notes of caramel, vanilla, and berries.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
that's good. I like going to tea shops with like the little tea, like the full on, like, oh my God, it's such an experience. I like food a lot. Mm. This is one of the reasons why I was fat and getting towards being fat again. Now I have to diet again. COVID has not helped with that at all.
No.
So, but no, like little tea shops where you can get like the multi-stacked tier, like cakes and stuff, and you get like all, oh my God, yeah. It's such an experience. Like, I love it. But I'm not a good tea drinker. I always like milk and honey. Like, no matter what I'm drinking in, it's always, I want milk and honey. So, we hit through the tea thing. Where were you born at? Let's start it off right at the beginning.
Let's see. I was born in Washington. Where was I born? I was born in Longview. Basically, it's near Portland, Oregon.
Okay. So is that where you grew up then? Is in that area?
Yeah, I grew up between Seattle and Portland. Those two areas.
Okay. What did your parents do for a living? I know that you've said before that they worked really hard. And that's going to bring me some questions kind of later on too. But what did your parents do for a living?
My dad worked his way from being a working in the bakery in like grocery stores. So we have like a grocery store chain called like Top Foods, I think it is, in the Pacific Northwest. So he started off there and then worked his way into sort of the back end of things. So he ended up basically becoming a salesman for a company that sells the proofs and things. Basically, like, you know, Starbucks, they're going to bake their own like cooked goods, but they obviously don't cook it from scratch. Yeah. Right. And so he started working for a company that sells like those basic things.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of worked his way from. So he literally worked his way kind of from the bottom, right, of being like just, you know, in a bakery to at some point in time, you know, doing regional wholesale of you know, the entire United States sort of thing. Wow. So,
OK, yeah. What did your mom do?
Mom was a stay-at-home mom until I was about 10 and then went back to school, completed her degree and became an accountant, went from a public accountant, a CPA, doing, you know, working at one of those firms doing normal people's accountants, and then worked her way up, and now she's very high up there working for a company that is a that works for the government.
Oh,
a government contractor.
So. Ooh, exciting. Now, one of the cool things about you, and I hope that I have this right, at least this is what I looked up, is that you have four brothers and one sister. Is that right?
No. I have four cousins, male cousins, and one female cousin that are all in the same family. And they are like my brothers and sisters. I am actually an only child.
Oh, okay. Well, whoever wrote that information online, you're wrong, and you should correct it.
Is that on my Wikipedia or something like that?
I don't know. Maybe it was one of them. That's why I always like to check things. So you're an only child. Yeah. That's got to be. Is that something that you liked, or do you wish that you had brothers and sisters? Because I have a little brother. And let me just tell you, being the older brother and having a younger brother, like growing up, you're like, fuck this kid. Like,
So everybody always tells you, like when you're an only child growing up, you're like, you're so lucky.
Yeah.
You know, like I hate my brother, I hate my sister and something like that. But they do love them, right? Mm-hmm. So I just have an absence of that.
Yeah.
Right. Where I don't know what it's like.
Yeah.
I was okay with it because you know, I read a lot and things like that. And I was very close with my mom. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of things together. But I probably would have preferred to have more people around in general.
Yeah.
Just because the area that I grew up, I didn't have like a lot of friends. So.
Oh, okay. So you mentioned that you didn't have a lot of friends in the area growing up. What was it like growing up for you?
Well, I grew up in a I grew up in a very, very small school going through elementary of
How small are we talking? Because like I actually went to so I'm from Michigan, like upper Michigan, okay. like the middle of nowhere, Michigan, not Detroit. Everyone okay. thinks Detroit. But so I like my graduating class was 100. But the school before that, I only had like 20. Like my graduating class would have been 20.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what we're talking about. Okay. I had 8 kids who graduated in my 8th grade.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so like really, really small. Like so small where the dating options are very limited.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was just through elementary school. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 8 kids in my 8th grade class. That's because I went to a private Adventist Christian school. Which
really?
Private Christian school is already obviously sizing it down a bit. And then Adventist is like... A section of Christianity.
I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of it before. I won't lie.
They're crazy. They're crazy. Right?
So you're not religious then, I take it.
No. No, okay. I'm not. Not anymore. So they're one of the Christians that go to church on Saturday.
Oh god. And
so
Sunday?
Growing up, I went to church on Saturday. So basically they hold still parts of the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. They still follow parts of the Old Testament. So for example, you're not supposed to eat pork and things like that. You know, like the difference between the hooves. The Bible says you can eat some cloven hoof or because they're considered dirty meats. So not supposed to eat bacon, not supposed to eat pork.
Did you not eat bacon for a while?
I had turkey bacon.
Okay.
It's actually still my preference growing up, today. For me, I don't really, there isn't much of a difference between turkey and regular bacon. I know turkey bacon's healthier. So
that's true.
That is actually what I prefer. But I did have pepperoni growing up. So obviously there was part of me that like knew I was doing something bad. And my parents, well, my dad's not religious and my mom really only grew up in the household, but wasn't like terribly religious either. Like we'd skip church all the time and stuff like that. So I did not grow up very indoctrinated.
Okay. Did that make it hard? Cause you mentioned you didn't have a lot of friends. Did that make it hard with going to the school? Like were the people you went to school with also like, were they very indoctrinated or were they not? Cause it's like, if they were, then you're not going to fit it. Cause you're the bad boy who eats pepperoni.
there were like one or two, but mostly no.
Okay.
Mostly not. I don't know. Maybe it's like a Pacific Northwest thing.
Yeah.
But maybe it was just the area that I was growing up in. But like, no, most of the kids that I knew were not terribly. Most of them actually went on to go to the Adventist high school. So maybe that like continued, as they got older. But I did not. So I ended up going to a normal Christian high school. And then for 1 year, and then I went to a public high school.
Okay.
So I went from 8 kids in a class to 100, 200 kids in a class to 400, 500 kids in class in the space of 2 years. So it was a rapid growing up experience.
Was it your choice to go to the public school or was it circumstance?
A bit of both.
Okay.
Parents divorced and I ended up choosing to go to the high school that my cousin, who's just 9 months older than me, mm-hmm. he was going to that public high school, so I went to the same.
Okay.
I had a choice. I could have chosen an Adventist Christian high school, but I didn't really want to go back to that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So how old were you when your parents got divorced?
Freshman year. So okay. 13, something like that.
Okay. My parents divorced when I was very, very young, but it wasn't like amicable. It was like awful. Like I still remember. Mm. And then like when I got to be a sophomore, I had to go through another custody battle because I wanted to switch houses, which was basically like a divorce all over again. You thought you could have two divorces with the same family, but it was pretty awful. But I think that it actually happens a lot to a lot of people. And I think their experiences are different. How people handle it are completely different. What was it like for you?
For me, it was kind of, okay, because, I you know, I have really great parents, and despite it not being the most amicable thing in the world, obviously, no divorce is, they were both very determined to be there for me. And also, my dad sort of understood that, that I just growing up, like, he had to work and my mom was a stay at home mom. So naturally I was more attached to her.
Yeah.
And he understood that. So he, throughout my life, he's just, traveled in order to visit me and stuff. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's a great dad. My mom's fantastic. And, yeah, so they worked pretty hard to make things as normal as possible. Yeah. Obviously, obviously no divorces, like, uprooting your life and moving and all those sorts of things.
Was it hard for you?
Not normal, but, I don't think it was too hard for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about me, but I've just kind of always been sort of, somebody who can kind of go with the flow.
Yeah,
I guess I can just kind of, my dad calls me a chameleon sometimes, then I can just adapt to whatever the situation is and kind of be okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. So what kind of stuff did you like to do growing up? Like I imagine, like, video games are obviously part of your life.
I mean,
I feel like that's a very obvious one. Like, but besides video games, what else was important?
Reading, a lot of reading.
What kind of reading did you like to do?
So I am a fantasy through and through sort of reader. So have I read a lot of fantasy novels. I don't read sci-fi a ton, but I did when I was younger.
Have you ever read Dragonlance?
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay. I wasn't sure if you were a D&D guy too. So
no, I'm a D&D guy now, but I wasn't back then. No.
Okay. Well, if you ever get a chance, if you like reading fantasy, you should read the Dragonlance novels, because they played D&D, and then she wrote, like, the books based on, like, interactions that had, from what I can gather.
Okay.
So, but I'm a huge.
I was into the, R.A. Salvatore series, the Drizzt
D'Urden. Drizzt. That would be the second one I would recommend reading. I started reading. I don't think they're as good. I'm not going to lie. Like, I've read them. I've been reading them recently, and compared to the Dragonlance, I will send you the list, because I sent it the other day. Because whenever I get to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, I will, because I just love Dungeons & Dragons. So I've been playing it since I was six, so that is that's why. It's a very long time. I'm happy that it's cool now and everyone's playing it, and it makes it a lot less awkward, because it was not cool when we were kids at all. So especially around
know anybody who played it, anything like that. Craig also probably would have considered satanic, like, that's what the Adventist Christian school would be like. They'd be like too far behind, where they'd still be in the 80s, you know, thinking that it's satanic cult ritual stuff. Yeah. They didn't like rock music. I remember we watched a video on the devil's horns, you know, and, like, how that was the devil's sign and stuff like that.
Really?
Wild stuff. Yeah.
That's some crazy indoctrination. My stepmom, actually, because she was actually fairly religious too, when she first, like, married my dad, when she first heard about Dungeons, we didn't tell her till after they got married, so she couldn't just leave. But she thought it was the devil until he slowly, like, let her learn about the game that it has nothing to do with that. But she also thought D&D was about the devil.
That's funny, man. Yeah. Some of those things, you know, they just kind of, like, somebody says it and it gets spread through, especially religion, and then people just, like, stick to that, and you have to convince them otherwise.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if you'd ever heard the stories, but I know that early on in D&D, I guess some kids might have done, like, acid or something, and they had a bad trip. And I think one of them took down a sword and, like, killed a bunch of people. I think that's where a lot of it came from. Like, some bad PR happened. So you were into reading fantasy. You were into playing video games, obviously. Did you do anything else? Were you a sports guy? Because, I mean, obviously you went on later to do the military, but.
My dad was a sports guy, so yeah, I was kind of put through sports. I didn't love it. So I did most of the traditional sports. I never did football. I think my mom sort of, my dad wasn't, like, into football that much. That wasn't what he played as a kid. He played basketball mostly.
Okay.
So I went through basketball, baseball, soccer, all those sorts of things. And I did not like it. It just kind of forced me to do it because, you know, it's also social activity.
Yeah.
Right. So something that I definitely needed. So they kind of forced me to just go through that. But then when I got into high school, I continued to do sports, but it was the sports of my choosing. Yeah. So I ended up doing golf and tennis, which I found that I really, really enjoyed tennis. So, yeah, I just, you know, I think I just played the wrong sports.
Yeah.
That wasn't really my kind of game. So,
okay. One of the things you've mentioned in interviews before is that you used to be really introverted. So what was that like being introverted? Was it like you weren't really talking to people? Was it you just prefer to be by yourself? What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, I think like growing up only child, 8 kids in my class, it's not like we were hanging out after school at all. So it was just like, it was a lot of me just kind of like being around myself a lot. And I think it's actually quite good. It just cause the way I guess I developed it, like I still developed enough social cues and those sort of things that, I was able to do all right in high school and that sort of thing. But you know, now I'm just very comfortable being in my own head.
Yeah.
And like whenever I'm working events or something like that, it's, you know, I work the event. It's a lot of being extroverted and being out there. And then afterwards I'm kind of done and I just need some alone time and, you know, I just chill and vibe with myself and yeah.
Okay. So did that get really hard was that like really hard going from like 8 to 400 people in your class? Because I imagine that would be, well, for me, I feel like it would be terrifying because I'm also an introvert who has made myself more extroverted over the years. But especially thinking about like early on, like going from like 20 to 100, I thought was huge. And I was like nervous and
Yeah. You like when you're introverted and you read a lot, like you imagine social scenarios, right? That's I think what a lot of introverted people do. It's part of the reason that I think they're introverted is that the things go on in their head first, before they feel like it's okay to actually say something.
Yeah.
You know, once you've got sort of a plan almost, then it's okay to speak out loud and say things. So, you know, fortunately I was able to just kind of adapt pretty well. I was quiet in high school, but I still made some friends and people still seem to like me. So, yeah.
Now, one of the interesting things, we're going to make a little bit of a side tangent here, is your original name, Capitalist, that you don't really use anymore. You go by Cap more now. You actually got from, I believe it was high school. Like the story is that someone named themselves the Communist. You named yourself the Capitalist. And then eventually that got shortened down to Capitalist. But now it's shortened down to Cap. So I want to do a quick side tangent here and ask you maybe a little bit of a harder question here. Why the name change from Capitalist to Cap? Is it to avoid like any like political stigma of like capitalism, which is lately is pretty bad?
No, it definitely is. Mostly because... I mean, I just like, honestly, I can't be fucked with having a political or economic argument with people who like who come at me, you know, like wanting to talk about something because, you know, like I'm not the most right leaning. In fact, I'm more left leaning than anything else. Yeah. So it's like a lot of people come at me with like, what do you think? What do you think you're doing? And I'm just like, whoa, man. Like, first of all, I don't want to like, I'm not trying to like, I'm not at the age anymore where I'm trying to have arguments online with people about economics or politics anymore. That was when I was a teenager, you know? And that is where the name came from. Because again, I've never been super right leaning or anything like that. But I had a friend who was like hardcore left leaning, and we were having just a debate. And, you know, he changed his name to the Communist to sort of taunt me.
Yeah.
So I did the same, you know, and it just kind of stuck. It kind of sounded cool. So you just kind of stick with those things. And next thing you know, that's kind of what, that's what I was casting as. And then from there on out, it was like, do I do a rebranding? Well, I don't know what I would rebrand to. I don't like, I thought about trying to do something with my name, which is Austin, but I don't, there's not a ton I can do with that.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought about Austentatious and I was just like, eh.
I kind of like that. I can't.
It's cool. It's cool. But I just didn't like, I didn't like it enough to pull the trigger on it. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
That's fair. That's fair. Name changing is very difficult. I've done it a couple times now because my last name is Panashevitz. So ideally I would like something like Blake, but I don't know. Like my last name is just ridiculous. So it's like, I can never use this because no one will ever be able to find it. So I was like, well, we want something Blake related. And it took me forever to find something. I was like, okay, this will do for right now, I guess. But yeah, no, name changing is a pain because you have to make sure it's the same on all the socials now. Mm-hmm. That's a pain.
Yeah, nowadays you have to think about like the branding that's involved with that and like what would be good branding. Like obviously if I had the choice, then I wouldn't have gone with capitalist just because there are so many things that end up getting associated with that for just a very simple thing, right? Like nothing to do with politics or economics, just Googling capitalist is not going to find me, right? And that would be ideal if you put in my name and found me. So, that was a
side question for you then. Mm-hmm. I guess related to this political, some people feel the need that when you have an online presence that you should be active. And do your like almost like do your part and to get an audience to some belief system. What do you think about that thought?
I think everybody has their own priorities when it comes to these things. And everybody has their own like the amount of effort they can put into things.
Yeah.
So basically, there are certain things that I feel really passionate about.
Yeah.
And when it comes to those things, I will be outspoken. I will stand my ground on those things. These are the things that I have the energy that I can put into it.
Yeah.
But I do not have the energy to put into everything that I support.
Yeah.
Some people are blessed and some people are able to support every single, you know, they're out there planting trees while simultaneously telling people to vote while you know, like they're doing everything. And that isn't me. But there are some things that I feel are important and, I will stand by those things. And I've done that several times in my past. So, I think it's for a lot of people, it's about picking and choosing.
Yeah.
There was that recent LEC mess with their sponsor, with Neom, and things like that. And I think that's a great example of people picking and choosing when they stand up against things. Because obviously every detractor in the world pointed the same thing, which was like, oh, but you guys are owned by Tencent, you know?
Yeah.
And then what about China and Worlds is in China and all those sorts of things. Well, Neom was something that was small enough and personal enough that those talent could put their efforts and their careers on the line for something like that. And I think people need to understand that you do pick and choose your battles. Mm-hmm. Everybody does. Yeah. No. I mean, like, let's say very, very few people take every battle that is offered to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you do that, if you try to take every battle, I don't know if it works out. Like, I think eventually, like, crappy as it sounds, like, there's a lot of bad things that happen in the world. And if you're, like, I don't know, it's a really hard place where you want to be against everything, but at some point you also need to eat. And it's like, you know?
There's not every event requires you full hog supporting it, right? Like, I support the, you know, like, the China thing where I can, which is, like, okay, voting where I can. I'm not really saying anything about it because I have like a pretty international audience. Yeah. Like Dota especially is like very, very mixed where English is a representative of Southeast Asia, India, Europe, you know, like South America watches English cast sometimes. Like you're a representative for a large amount of people and there's a lot of culture clash that goes on. You know, a lot of Chinese Americans as well. So there's a lot of culture clash that goes on. And when it comes to my commentating, or not even my commentating, but just like the commentating for Dota, the analysis for Dota, like you don't want to push people away and just for the sake of what? Some political grandstanding that doesn't actually do anything. Like I would like to have as much of an inclusive culture and try and steer people towards your direction that I personally think is the right direction to go. But, you know, I you can't make those like hard, like, you know, boycotting and decrying everything that goes on when you're trying to be that inclusive.
Yeah,
to all cultures. It's a very weird subject. It came up with the Me Too movement as well, where there's like a lot of culture clash that goes on, where there's areas where, you know, that same kind, you know, where feminism and things like that are held to a lot more scrutiny.
Yeah.
Let's say a lot less accepted.
Yeah.
So you gotta like fight those battles, but fight them in a way that you don't just literally cut off a large swath of people and say your idea is wrong, get the fuck out.
Yeah, it's very, do you feel that the world has become more polarized? Because that's what I feel like it's very much polarized since when I was younger, that you basically it's a lot of times it's not okay to have different opinions. That if you have different opinions, then people try that they just want to be part of you. Because I feel like maybe the internet itself has promoted this idea of a group mentality that people just tend to be with the people that are similar thought.
Yes and no. I think that that yes, it's more polarizing in that there are more people that you basically hear the voices that are more extreme and more diehard about their philosophies and will tell you to eat shit and die because you don't have the same idea that they have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think for most of the people, you know, like the horseshoe, you know, like everybody who's not, you know, how like the horseshoe goes and those extremist philosophies actually kind of get closer together towards the end. I think everybody else who's not on those extremist ends, but are on the more general audience sort of things. I think those people are hearing more opposing opinions. And I think in general, people have an understanding more than they used to about different cultures and different ideas that are out there and how you can have different ideas and still respect each other. There's this like interesting stat about wars going down with the rise of the internet.
Yeah.
And I think that that's interesting. I don't know if that's entirely true, but I think that's interesting just because the idea being more communication, the more open that you are, if I could just pick up the phone, get on the internet and talk to somebody across the world, then hopefully that helps bring the world together a little bit more and we have less oppositions. But
interesting.
I believe that anyway, but I have an optimistic side to me. So
I am a lot of times I'm very pessimistic about the world. So I will fully admit that I call it realism a lot of times, but, you know, I feel like that's a lot of times just pessimists trying to be nice. I can be very pessimistic though. One of the interesting things is, you did go to college, but you didn't really know what you were doing in college. So when you first are looking to go into college, what is going through your mind? Cause you don't really know what you're doing. And you still went, like you could have done anything else. You could have traveled the world, anything. Like what causes you to be like, yeah, I still need to go to college?
It's kind of like it's just expected, I guess, for I think in American culture, I think it's mostly expected, at least coming from the background that I did, that you're just going to go to college unless you have a plan otherwise.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you have something specifically like, oh, I don't want to go to college. I want to go to a trade school or I want to travel Europe. I wouldn't have had the money to do that, but like, you know, like unless you have some sort of game plan, then why aren't you going to college sort of deal? And so like, especially with my mom, you know, as I said, she went back to college, and completed her degree. So it was important for me to be able to get like, that step ahead. yeah. that she had to later go back and do. So also, to be perfectly honest, like, I'm a pretty smart guy. I'm not like the smartest kid in the class every single time, but like, I'm decently smart. I got pretty good grades. Like, why wouldn't I go to college? Mm-hmm. You know, colleges would accept me. So, and my family would support me where they can, and I can take on loans. And there are statistics that say, like, here's how much more money you make if you have a college degree. Yep. Like, so why wouldn't you? And so why wouldn't I? So I chose to go to a community college to keep my debt low.
Smart.
Because I understood that I didn't know what I wanted.
Yep.
And so I kind of hoped that I would figure it out. But as a plan B, I kind of said, well, I'm only going to community college, so I'm not actually going to put myself in debt. And that it probably is what prevented me from doing any further, because community college is very, very independent, right? If you were to go to university, like, all of a sudden you're in a dorm, you're surrounded by people and friendships and like all those sorts of things that kind of bind you to this daily activity. Community college is way more independent. You know, like, you're sharing classes with 30, 40 year olds who have regular lives and regular jobs, and you don't have those social ties. You know, you go to that class, you leave, and you don't see those people for, you know, 2 days or a week, depending on how often the class is gone. So I didn't really have a whole lot of ties to that, and I wasn't enjoying what I was studying. It just kind of felt like revamp of high school, and I was already getting some serious senioritis towards the end of high school anyway.
Yeah.
So at some point in time, I was like, I need a challenge of some kind. I need something to give me some sort of direction. Mostly I wanted a challenge. I wanted to challenge myself. And I felt like, you know, cause like the first 2 years of college, they're like, they're not your specialty classes. You're not orienting yourself towards a specific degree.
Yeah.
So it's just like general classes. And I'm just kind of like, I'm bored of this. I've just done 13 years of this or whatever. So
you did go, at least the stuff I read, that you went to university very briefly. After community college.
I just went to community college. Okay. That's it.
Well, that source also wrong, people. Please get that right. What, like, I know you wanted a challenge, but going into the military is a very odd challenge to want to do. How did you get into the thought process of, you know what I want to do? I want to go join the military. Was your family military? Was there any like sort of ties or?
No, not at all. My grandfather was in the military, but he passed away when I was like 10. Mm-hmm. And obviously I don't really remember him talking about that at all. Nobody in my family is in the military. I decided on that because I wanted, I know the kind of person I am, which is I am not the best self-starter.
Yeah.
But I work very hard under people's direction.
Okay.
You know, if I'm given a mission, if I'm given a goal and a team to work with towards it, like I will work very hard in that regard. So I knew I needed like some direction. Mm-hmm. In that regard, I know I wanted some sort of challenge to be able to prove myself that wasn't college. And so I started looking in the military, and I pretty much decided between Air Force or Marine Corps. And I ended up choosing Marine Corps because, again, the challenge aspects, right? That is like the Marine Corps is supposed to be the hardcore of the force. So that's where I went to. And honestly, I decided and signed up pretty quickly. There's a lot of side benefits, like, okay, when I go back to college, like I'll be able to keep myself out of debt.
Yeah.
With the GI Bill, those sort of things. Hopefully I'll be able to learn something in the military as well that is useful. In general, like, hopefully I'll just find a direction, find out what I want to do with my life.
Did you have a conversation with your family before you signed up, or was it?
Yeah, my mom lost her shit.
Really? Well, not totally surprised. What was that conversation like?
It was, she did not like it at all, which is, which I can be stubborn when I want to be. Basically what I did was I sort of met her halfway, and I ended up joining the reserves.
Okay.
Rather than going active. And yeah, because I don't know, like my mom was, she did not take it very, because, you know, like, again, nobody in my family was military, so yeah. It's not exactly something she was expecting.
Okay.
So
what about your dad? Was he just like, eh, okay?
Yeah, I mean, my dad wasn't like super excited either, but he was more accepting of it.
Okay, so you do the reserves. I was wondering why you actually did the reserves, because especially if you're going for a challenge, I was actually surprised that you didn't try for like the top of the line, like what is the hardest thing I can do in the Marine Corps. So
yeah, I was never gonna go like infantry or something like that. That wasn't my choice. What I wanted to do was go active and go combat photography or intelligence.
Yeah,
those were the two areas where I had, because I was working with a professional photographer at that time. So I had some interest in photography, so combat camera, okay. And then the other one was intelligence, honestly, for all the reasons that you could think of, that I thought of myself as a smart guy going into the military. I was like, intelligence, you know, like it's literally in the name. Yeah. Where else would I go?
Yeah. That makes sense. So interesting thing, you're into photography. How into photography were you? I know you were a photographer's assistant.
I would say that I had a passing interest in it, that I still like, I still enjoy, like looking at, like I follow some accounts where I think, that they've got a really interesting pictures. I still like consuming photography. I just don't engage in it myself. Mm-hmm. I don't actually take a whole lot of pictures. But yeah, I used to have a camera that I bought off of the photographer that I was working for. I was in the process of learning and potentially making that a field that I could get into. Mm-hmm. But again, there was like not quite enough passion there for me, who's somebody who's, again, not really much of a self-starter, to actually make a successful career out of.
Mm-hmm. Now, you kind of touched on this a little bit, so I'm going to sidestep here about not really being a self-starter. You went freelance, and I think in 2016, I think that was, or 2016 or 2017, you went freelance. That's got to be a very terrifying trait to have. And going freelance, because you don't have someone always directing you. A lot of it is on your own. How have you managed to deal with that?
Honestly, it's been super easy, because I was in a position in my career at that point that while I was scared that I wouldn't get gigs, there was a side of me that said, like, okay, realistically, you're going to keep getting hired.
Yeah.
You're going to get hired for something. It actually did not work out very well the very first year. I actually was not hired for that much. That very first year I went freelance. But I moved in with my mom. My girlfriend and I both moved to the US, moved in with my mom. So that cuts a lot of expenses. And then I was kind of streaming and working, whatever events I could get. And that year didn't go okay, but it really picked up the next year. Mm-hmm. And I think that year I also didn't get TI main event, which was really bad as well. That the bottom line of my financial bottom line of that year was like very, very shit. But it still was okay.
Yeah.
And it could only go up from there. So ultimately
is that a trait you still deal with? Easy. That you're still better off working underneath someone than necessarily working by yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a hard time. Like, I'm a freelancer, but you look at my YouTube, I have plenty of time to create YouTube content, but I have a hard time. I'm not an idea man. Okay. That's another thing. I'm not an idea man, but I'm really good at taking ideas and making them better.
Yeah.
So, when it comes to when I'm at events and that sort of thing, like I'm not the idea person. Slack, Tsunami, those kind of guys. Those are guys that are going to come up with the memes. I'll help. And like while I'm there, I'm like, oh, it would be really cool if we did something like this. I'll be in the video and I'll do whatever needs to be done. But I'm not the one who comes up with that idea. So being independent talent, if you want to create some sort of content outside of that, like you really have to like want it, and you really have to have, I think, good ideas for it. And you have to be enough of an entertainer and brand that people want to consume it. And I feel like I'm not quite there in like all of those metrics. So, but fortunately, I'm hired for a lot of events.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That brings me to another question. Do you think that this trait holds you back? Do you think it holds you from being because obviously you mentioned that you're like the brands aren't quite there yet to do all this other stuff. But I mean, it seems like if you were to get that stuff there, that would put you on another level. Like, I mean, you're already a very highly sought after, obviously, commentator. I'm not dissing any of your talent there, but there is another level that you could reach.
Yeah, no doubt. This is something that I thought about like 2-3 years ago or something, which was that like in a more traditional sports format, I would work a lot better as a commentator. Mm-hmm. But in this world of esports, that is a lot more open, a lot more self-driven, a lot more contract work. You will have great opportunities to create something amazing for yourself. But sadly, I'm just not that kind of person. So, I think it would take me on another level if I could find that thing where I both find the passion and the satisfaction and the feedback. That would be like, unfortunately, everything that I've made like doesn't really get it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It's like you think to yourself like, no one's gonna watch this. You don't create anything that anybody's gonna watch. When you finally do, nobody does watch it because you haven't put in any work into your brand in that regard. And lo and behold, you're right, nobody watches it. And then you think to yourself like, shit, well, I'm not gonna do more of that.
It's terrible. I've struggled with that. Yeah, no, I can relate. This is not a very popular show, but I will say that people do notice it. I was actually surprised. Like, there's occasionally people who I reach out to, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we've seen your stuff," and I'm like, "How do you even know who I am? Like, no one's seen this. How are you one of like the people?" And so it's always very nice. But I think for me, like, the reason I do this show is because the only reason I can do this show is because I put out content that I think no one else does, and it brings me fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Like, that's honestly it. Like, I feel like, but that's super important, I feel like. But I think that yours is an industry quandary with esports in itself, and one of the most common questions people in esports get asked is, how do I make it in esports? The problem is that your trait is the exact trait that I think stops most people from ever getting into esports. Like, completely.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty unique in what I offer as a commentator. But my attitude and stuff is exactly as you said, what usually keeps people back from being able to succeed. So like, I just got very lucky in a lot of regards. Mm-hmm. Like, Like, I think I worked really hard to be a good play-by-play commentator. I have something special, which is that I can provide expert insight from the play-by-play side. I think that's pretty rare across most esports, right? But especially in Dota. And so like, I already had a unique product. You know, if I was a different kind of person, I could have taken that and blown it up. Mm-hmm. But I fortunately got picked up by Joint Dota, which helped start my career in a lot of ways. I don't know how much, like, if I don't get picked up and make that a full-time job, I don't know how much, like, I would have kept casting with Toby, and I would have probably looked for more casting opportunities. And I know I always wanted to do play-by-play, so I would have eventually transitioned into that. I just don't know what sort of paths it would have taken me. Maybe it would have been total failure. Maybe because that lack of self-starting, I wouldn't have done enough to jumpstart my career. Like, you were joined Dota, you're working constantly. So there's just through the sheer act of attrition, I'm eventually going to wear the audience down and have them accept me. So
one of the things I wanted to ask you, because It does seem that you would thrive better underneath a company. Why haven't, or maybe you have, has there been anything on the radar for something like a completely different game where you did a long-term year contract? Obviously, Overwatch announced that, but that wouldn't be my first guess for a game that you'd want to. But I could see like League of Legends, to be honest, if you ever found a long-term contract there. Why isn't something like that happen? Because that feels like a perfect fit where it's something long-term you can just dedicate towards mm-hmm. the one company. Why hasn't that yeah. happened?
Yeah, I work really good in team dynamics.
Yeah.
And that is part of my casting style as well, is that I work really well with a partner. So I would work better in a League of Legends, LEC type sort of situation where I have a group of creative people around me that help me be more creative and I can help fuel their ideas and stuff. Or Overwatch League. I did have a soft offer for Overwatch League when they were first putting it together. But I took about 3 days. If I remember, I think I took about 3 days. And I don't think I streamed or anything during that time. And I just grinded out some Overwatch. I was like, okay, I've got this offer on the table. The first year of being freelance has gone pretty shit. I think that's how I remember it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that timeline exactly syncs up or not, but I just remember thinking that like this freelance thing hasn't gone super well. So maybe Overwatch League would be good. I grinded out Overwatch and ultimately I found that I was not going to get the kind of satisfaction casting it as a game. Like I didn't have the drive to keep playing it and be really good at it. Like I am at Dota.
Yeah.
And I know that passion will make my casting style suffer. And I'm not convinced that like I'm a good enough caster to be able to cast something that I'm not passionate about and still be successful. I think esports fans are very good at reading authenticity and finding passion. I think they sniff that shit out better than any other fans, man. Because they're so tied in with the game. I mean, sports fans, they're watching a game and they may consume it to all their hearts, but they're not playing it. Most of them are not playing that game anymore, right?
Yeah.
They're only consuming everything that is created for them. Whereas esports fan, they're literally still playing the game and they're consuming all the esports content.
Isn't CSGO a slight deviation from that? Isn't there more people actually watching that than, I feel like I remember hearing that somewhere that there's more people who actually watch CSGO than play it.
I think Dota is I think Dota very too, similar probably, and it is going the same route for sure. But the opinion that gets crafted by the general community is still fueled by people who play the game regularly, right? Like even if this one guy doesn't play the game regularly, he's reading the opinions of other people who are playing the game or stuff like that. So, and even if they did like, they were playing tons and tons and tons of it like for the last 5 years. And, you know, now they don't play it, but they watch it for the last 9 months or something like that. So, these sort of people, they just sniff out authenticity. And if I was like Odie Pixel, then I have no doubt that he would be able to pull off any esport that he wants to because he's such a great. He's like technically very, very good. He's like top of the game when it comes to play-by-play casters. I'm not convinced that I would be able to pull that off because I think part of what I do well, a lot of it is rooted in the passion that I have. So
that's got to be... Well, okay, what about League of Legends then? Because it's a MOBA as well. I mean, obviously, they're very different games, but honestly, that would have been my first get. If you could get a Riot gig... and you're in LA, which is where they do stuff anyways. Why hasn't Riot happened?
You know what's funny is I've actually played a small amount of League of Legends when it was first out for this like first 3-4 years, because that was what my family played. Mm-hmm. And I do even now still watch a fair amount of League of Legends. Mostly for the product and the commentators. I think once upon a time, like the LCS casters were my favorite to listen to. I think they had a lot of good talent there. Nowadays, it's the LEC that's putting on like an incredibly good show.
So good. It's so good. And their other content, their like evergreen content, so good too.
Yeah.
So good.
And so I watched that more of just like kind of like studying. People and figuring out like how to be better as a commentator. But yeah, so I watched a decent amount, but no, I have no passion for that game.
That's got to be scary then. If you have to be passionate about a game in order to get into it, that would be a terrifying, like, so like for me, for interviewing, I think I could interview for every game because the thing that I'm passionate about is getting to know people. And so like it doesn't, like, that's why I've interviewed so many different games. Is I just find people fascinating and getting their story across, which I think is very helpful, because it also kind of hurts because a lot of people like just one game. But like, that's my passion, is like getting to know people. But if I was stuck to just one game, that would be terrifying, especially as the lifetime of games go. It's probably inevitable that eventually a game probably won't be around anymore, or it'll change.
Yeah. No, I think Dota is I think what I've kind of settled on is that how many years do I have left in Dota? How many years can Dota keep sustaining me? At some point in time, I've got to find a new esport to move towards.
Yeah.
And I looked at Overwatch League. No. Looked at at Valorant. No. That didn't scratch any itch for me either. So yeah, it is kind of concerning that it's like, okay, at the same time, Dota will never die until something comes around that kills it. We're talking like 10 years from now, maybe it eventually dies. Yeah. But I really don't think anything, something has to actually kill it.
Yeah,
you know, something has to actually take it out. So when I look at it, I look at it very similar to the StarCraft scene. Basically, like, I look at the StarCraft 2 scene and look at their talent and go, okay, are they still able to do this full time? Looks like it. They still get some decent viewers for tournaments and stuff. Yeah, it's obviously on the decline and has been for years. But if they're still able to do it, then 5 years from now, I'm still able to do it.
Yeah.
Because that's how I kind of judge it. Because Dota's fan base is still massive when it comes to viewership. It may not be the biggest esports game, but it is definitely one of the top four, top three, right? And so in that regard, I also think the longevity of the game. I think, again, like, Dota fans stay Dota fans. They don't go to other games, or at least they don't go for very long, because there's something special about the complexity of the game that, especially once you bought into it, once you've spent the thousands of hours into it, you want to feel like your time is worth something.
Yeah.
I think there's that side of it as well. So I think Dota fans are more likely to stay in this game, and even if they're not playing, they're probably going to be watching.
So I
think I still have a good amount of time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's concerning. Where am I going to go next after Dota?
Playing it by ear, because that's what it kind of feels like. It's like, oh, I'm going to do this until I can't do it. And you'll look at new games, but unless something really hits, you're probably never going to switch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep doing Dota until it's dead, buried in the ground and rotting for 6 months. I'm going to keep doing it for a really, really long time, no matter what. But yeah, I will be trying to make a transition at some point in time once I find something that does interest me enough. And I will try and be basically multi-game caster at that point in time and try and do both things at once. Failing that, I'll either go down the route of hosting, or I'll work in the back end. Like, I'm fortunate. Like, I have made enough friends in this industry that I know that I will have a job available to me once I quit casting, because I've proven myself as just like a hardworking, competent individual. I like to think that most yos view me as very drama free, easy to work with, hardworking. Like, every tournament organizer has me does play by play and then puts me on the desk and works me like two or three times as much as Owen. You know, like, at some point in time, that's got to prove something to people. So. Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to briefly touch on, seeing as we're already talking about casting stuff, is I'm assuming you saw like Henry G's thing about like leaving CS and like being burnt out. How bad is the burnout for you? Is that something that you've really had to struggle with or deal with? Like, and I've seen you comment too about Like if you could fix anything about like TOs, it'd be like industry-wide pay increase and making sure flights aren't doing where they connect flights together to get a cheaper discount. Like I've seen you talk about that on your Ask FM. What do you think? What's that been like for you?
Okay. So I think that the burnout is nowhere close to what CSGO experiences, mostly because CSGO is a game that has been more popular than Dota the last few years and will continue to be more popular because it's a fantastic game. CSGO is one of my favorite esports to watch.
Good game.
They also their tournament because they are Valve is even more hands off with CSGO that they are truly the most wild west when it comes to esports or a tournament organization. Yeah. Right, there is just tournaments going on nonstop. I counted up the gigs that I've worked so far. I don't know exactly how long Moses has been casting, but I think Moses said he's worked to like more than 150 or something like that.
Yeah.
Lands. I've only worked 65.
Oh.
Maybe a bit more. You know, like in my career, and I have worked pretty prodigiously over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm not even close to that, because here's the thing. Dota lands are typically longer.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing. Dota lands. And then we also have Valve, who is involved in the scene. So we have the majors when they were going on, right? That like the majors at some point in time, there was 3 majors in a year. So there was hardly any other LAN events.
Yeah.
But those majors did go on for like 2 weeks. So I think it's easier to not have burnout when you just go to one place, you're there for 2 weeks and then you leave, rather than go to 2 or 3 events during that same time period and do all the traveling. I think that is one part of it. I think that that TI is another big part of it, because we have a huge break since the players have been pretty terrible at organizing in CSGO until recently. Mm-hmm. To have things like a player break where there's no CSGO going on or anything.
Yeah.
TI was a natural break. We had no Dota leading into TI because nobody is going to go to that. They're focused on winning the international, winning millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And then there's a break afterwards too, for obvious reasons. Teams, once you have not won millions and millions of dollars in everything, all those things that were annoying you, all those doubts that you had in your team, all those thoughts about what if I was playing with this guy who gave me an offer instead, you know, all those things come to a head. And so teams naturally break apart, whether due to disappointment or stress or other opportunities, you know. And then there's no tournaments for a month afterwards. So we always have like a really solid month break into TI. And then TI is like 3 weeks long for the casters. And then another like month afterwards. Mm-hmm. So that solves a lot of burnout as well, right?
Okay.
That's almost like 2-3 months of just no other tournaments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that makes sense. You got to be really grateful then, especially like seeing maybe some of these other like tournament games or tournament organizers and lots of people complaining about like the burnout, like CSGO, you know, like all of that stuff coming out. I've heard people complain about Overwatch stuff. Working at the competitive side of Overwatch, that shit was brutal for the time that we did it. So I there's got to be a lot of gratefulness then the way that it works out being a Dota caster.
Yeah, I mean it comes with its own problems, right? Every setup so far that I've seen for esports and how involved their developer is for that esport all comes with its own pros and cons. But I think Valve's positions on CSGO and Dota are closer to the right thing.
Okay.
I think that Valve in Dota has made things very difficult for third-party organizers, so tournament organizers, to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that is concerning for us as the game is on its decline and has been for a number of years now, that like those things are going to be a problem if tournament organizers aren't making money, because at some point in time, a lot of tournament organizers are in Dota because for a number of things, it's one of the top esports games. So you want a foothold in there no matter what. Another thing is Valve has proven that they are not going to take over their esports scene. They haven't shown any indication of being interested in that in the slightest. And they don't even have the infrastructure to do something like that. So if you create something in Dota, if you create something in CSGO, it feels like it can last a very long time. Yeah. Whereas in other esports, you just never know if, Riot's going to pull their thing off like they did with League of Legends. Yeah. Hey, third parties.
Or Blizzard with Overwatch.
Oh, hey, by the way, this is mine now. Yep. And you don't get to be a part of it. Right? Tournament organizers, like Dota was basically looked at in many ways. It's like, okay, we do Dota because it's open, it's there, and we don't know what's going to be successful. So put a few, landmarks there in the Dota 2 country and make sure we just always have a presence there. Mm-hmm. But that cannot continue to be the reason why they're in Dota. They need to be actually monetarily successful. And Valve has hindered that a bit through, I think a lot of it is accidental. Mm-hmm. TI takes up so much of the landscape, so it's hard for third parties to generate a whole lot of hype and things for their event. I think that there are certain things like Dota TV, which is so good and so open and so amazing for players and for streamers and stuff, but isn't the most friendly for tournament organizers either. There are some problems there, and I think I still think I would prefer Valve's approach over anybody else's, because I'm not convinced esports infrastructure that is led by the developers themselves is the greatest idea. I think that is not natural growth. Mm-hmm. At some point in time, and we've seen it with like things like Overwatch League, which got pumped up so much, and then now it's they still made some money back by being able to sell it to YouTube, but at some point in time, you're gonna run out of people buying Overwatch League for millions and millions of dollars, and because the viewership just isn't there.
I think that's a completely fair statement. So jumping back a little bit, one of the things that you've mentioned is that you discharged early. You asked for an early discharge from the military to go cast Dota because you were made an offer. One of the things that you've said is that you really missed the military. Why is that? Was there something? Did you not like the military as much as you thought?
To be honest, like, I have met very, very few people that are like, yeah, man, like I should go back. I think there's a reason that you see people that career people in the military are people who keep reenlisting while they're already in. And they get these large sums of money that are offered to them and promises that are made while they're still in. It's something that they know. They haven't experienced something else. They're getting offered better opportunities. So shit, why not take it? Shit, retirement's just 12, 4 years away.
I know.
What's another 4 years, right? So, but I see very, very few people that get out, go like into the real world, and they go back.
And I not to
make too many generalizations here, but I feel like most of those people are simply people that just like did not succeed in the real world.
Okay.
And were like, okay, I'm going back to the military. Mm-hmm. I very, very few people, again, like I'm very happy I'm not it anymore. I still experience stress dreams at times of like, just certain things, like stupid things, like, I showed up to formation in the wrong uniform and I'm sitting there sweating. Oh shit, I'm late to formation. Like, fuck me. I experience those kind of stress dreams just like people do with college and stuff like that. And I wake up and I'm like, oh man, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that bullshit anymore. It's fantastic because the military, it is just long shares of bullshit. But I did not, it wasn't like I was unhappy in my time in the military. It's just that, like, and I'm happy I did it too. But it's a long series of bullshit.
Do you have any stories? Because I know my dad used to tell me stories from like boot camp. Like, did you have any like one like really good story that maybe you haven't told yet of like something that happened that would be like eye opening?
I don't know. Like I typically I feel like whenever I tell the stories of military, it never comes out quite right. Like there's always something that I find funny or like it like the people I tell it to, it's not very funny. Like there's just a lot of things. So I haven't actually told a ton of stories, and I'm struggled to like remember some of them, but, yeah, the stories that come to mind do not, they're not like terribly flattering.
Okay. I mean, normally
to
they're
the
not
military,
the stories my dad told me were never, very flattering, but I think it's, I think people, I like them because I think it gives a realistic expectation of like what you're actually, because a lot of times we fantasize about a lot of things. Like a lot of people fantasize about military, they fantasize, but I don't think they really understand what they're getting into, like the entire thing. So it's nice to like put some real, like realism there of like, hey, just an FYI, there's a lot of benefits for doing this.
Yeah.
It's not all great.
So everyone has a boot camp story. So I'll share this one that I've shared before, and we'll see how it goes. So the squad bays in boot camp, they're basically these big, like sort of hangar type deals where, it's basically just a gigantic room. And in the middle is a cement staircase. And then on the other side of that cement staircase is another big old sort of open room. Mm-hmm. And that is your squad bay. That's where all the bunk beds are and stuff like that. And that is where you live for the 3 months that you're there. The my platoon was something like 9-10 weeks into boot camp or something. We were basically on the outs. We were finishing up, and the platoon across the way was in there, like they were like 4 or 5 weeks back. So they were getting right into sort of some of the time where people start cracking a bit.
Yeah.
They either get out like really, really quickly in like the first week, and then they're like, this is way too much bullshit. Or at about like the fourth week in, because there's still so much time left, people, you know, start trying to find a way out. You know, this is typically where people go to medical a lot and things like that. I was standing watch. So basically, the rest of the platoon had gone and done something, and I was set to stand watch over our area.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm standing guard basically. And I have view of the door that goes out. That's totally open. I can see into the staircase, and I can see into the opposing platoon's open door as well. And I'm hearing a very, very large amount of yelling, which is obviously you hear it all the time at boot camp. But this is something different. It's like 3 or 4 voices yelling really, really loudly. And all of a sudden I see this recruit, and I see him running, and he books it out and starts heading towards the cement staircase. And I'm expecting him to run, turn left, and go down the staircase. And with these drill instructors running after him, I see him instead turn right instead of left. And to the right is a bit of a barrier. And then it's just open air. And we are on the 3rd or 4th floor.
Oh, my God.
And without hesitation, my man just goes and jumps right off.
What the hell? Was he running from?
He was running from the drill instructors.
I know, but why though? Why?
I don't know. Those are one of those things that I'll never get the details to, because you're just not privy to that. Like, I'm privy to the most amount of details because you know that happened in front of me, but like nobody in my platoon will ever know.
Was he okay?
Any sort of details about that? No, he broke his leg, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I'm
pretty sure, because I know an ambulance came, but the thing is, I can't move or anything that. So I'm still standing there. But like, so he just like straight up jumped off, right?
Jesus Christ.
Obviously, like mentally, not 100%.
Yeah,
like,
no.
There's a staircase that you can run down instead, but instead he opts to like just jump off. And so obviously, he's done.
Yeah.
And God damn. There's all this shit, like the drill instructors, you know, they look over, oh fuck, you know, they run down the staircase, call an ambulance, all those sorts of things. I think he broke his leg.
Yeah.
That is something that I just kind of assume. About an hour or so, the senior drill instructor comes by, and these are guys who have done like basically 30 different terms of these sort of drill instructor routes, and they're sort of like the big guys on campus sort of deal. And this drill instructor was this really, really muscly dude. He was about like 5'5", and he was just this jacked up guy. And he's sort of inspecting things, and he's kind of looking around, and I see him, he sort of glances at me, and he goes into his platoon and goes into that bay area, and I see him kind of walking around, looking back and forth. Nobody's around. That platoon had all gone somewhere and done something. And then he walks back out, and he kind of looks to the right. He kind of peers down. He looks down at the distance, and he walks over to me, and he asked me what I saw. I told him everything I saw. And then afterwards he was like, "Another one bites the dust, huh?"
What the hell?
And then he walks out.
What the hell?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And that's the sort of, that's a sort of a dark humor.
Yeah,
that,
no.
That goes on very frequently. That like is terrible when you tell to people outside of the military usually.
So. Yeah, well, I had heard stories of like, because my dad was, he actually went to Air Force, but he was doing, and he would talk about like people getting recycled and stuff, or like one time how he fell asleep, but he had a Bible. And if you fell asleep, that they would recycle you. But so someone came and yelled at him, and he said amen at the end of his prayer because he had fallen asleep, but he made sure to say that, and they thought he was just praying. But yeah, no, I remember hearing stories about, and I know everyone has one. Everyone who's been through boot camp has a story. So it's it's always one of the most interesting things, mostly because I tried to get in there and then they would let me. So I was like, I live vicariously through all the other levels. I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't do that because it sounds fucking terrible. Yeah. So I'm always very grateful. So you decide that you're going to ask for an early discharge. Was that a hard decision to make, or was that fairly easy?
No, that was easy to make because I was towards the I was getting close to the end of my contract, close-ish. But like, I also hadn't done anything in the military that I'd been particularly like happy with. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel like I had actually made a career in any way because I was in the reserves.
Yeah.
I did my stints of active, but the MOS that I got put into, or rather that, you know, I got recruiter fucked, and just like everybody has a boot camp story, yeah, everybody has a recruiter story as well. So I ended up going into admin because I was told, because I changed my thing from active to reserves, I was told that my only options were chef or admin or something else that was like very, very bland sounding. So I went into admin. I was thinking like, okay, I'm going to work with, I don't think some people get lied to and told that they're going to work with lawyers. My recruiter never told me that lie. But like I ended up working admin, and I was like, maybe this will, I'll get some sort of life experience that will be useful. But it was exceptionally boring. And so the stints of active I did, they were exceptionally boring as well, because I was working in an office the entire time, signing out paperwork. It's terrible. Oh. Pushing pencils all the time. And yeah, so it was very easy for me. Like, the sooner I could get out at that point in time, the better, because like I needed to like change an MOS or something in order to get some sort of satisfaction out of my time there. Again, like I didn't, it's not like I hated my time in it. It just felt like I got into basically the entire idea of going into the military was getting some sort of direction in my life. And I ended up getting no direction whatsoever. I was just kind of like, okay, this is a dead end situation.
Yeah.
So I was very excited for some sort of change in my life. Yeah. So I asked for, I can tell that story then. So yeah, I asked for an early discharge. I talked to my sergeant about it. I said, look, this is really, really important. I've got this once in a lifetime opportunity. I need to get out as soon as possible. And I've looked it up. I can apply for an early discharge based off of these circumstances. Like I have a unique job opportunity. I've already been in for 4.5, 5 years, something like that at that point in time. And yeah, like, let's make this happen. And so it was a lot of paperwork. It took a really long time. In fact, it was about from the start of the first time I got the job offer to when I finally get out was about 9-10 months.
Yeah.
That gives you an idea of like the sort of like how long it takes to in order to get through all of these sort of deals. And at some point in time, at about month 7 or something like that, I actually told in confidence to my sergeant, I was like, look, I'm getting word back from Joint Dota, the job offer that I had, that they cannot wait a whole lot longer. And I was like, I need a timeline and I need it ASAP. And if this is, this is one of those times where I was like, I was set on doing something. I was willing to do whatever it took, was that I told them, I was like, at some point in time, like, you just will not see me again. I was like, I will go AWOL. I don't give a shit at this point in time. Like, this is a special opportunity. I know it's special. And I was like, I have to be able to take this. And if this is going to keep delaying, and if I miss out on this opportunity, I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. So I will just leave. I don't care. I'll get dishonorably discharged. It's all good. Because I need to be able to take this opportunity. And fortunately, I don't know if that sped things up a little bit, because I was a perfectly fine Marine. There was nothing, like, it would just be one of those situations where people would not feel good about dishonorably discharging me. But they would have to. So I don't know if that like sped things up. But like then like 2-3 weeks later, I was told that, it would just be like another month and a half that, and they gave me, like, my sergeant was great. She gave me very, very detailed of like, here's exactly where it is in the chain. Here's how it has to go all the way up and then it has to go all the way back down. So yeah, this is where we're at. So I was able to get some sort of timeline and I didn't do anything drastic, which would have been just, not showing up. Mm-hmm. Anymore going UA.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you didn't have to do that. So one of the things I at least saw.
Well, actually, sorry, that was going to lead into a story. I want to tell a story.
I like stories. Keep going.
I forget about these stories. The story is that when so in like the last month, right?
Yeah.
My gunnery sergeant was this like short, very short, 5 foot, like 5'1", 5'2", like, yeah, 5'2", and he was black and he was super, super, super jacked. Like the other guy that I described, like, okay. Something about it. Like, man, these, like, some of these military guys, like, it's got, like, they've got nothing else. So they just keep on working.
You also
out.
Mentioned they're both short. So maybe they were trying to like, okay,
yeah,
we just
like, I honestly do think that comes, maybe that's a little bit it's such a macho environment, you know, that like being shorter is probably something that leaves you with some insecurities. But yeah, like this dude, but he was hilarious. I love that gunny. He was super fun to work with. I'd only worked with him for like the last 6 months or something like that. But he was fantastic and he was normally like very, very nice, but I saw him in one other indication where he got really, really mean, to somebody, cause somebody fucked up to really badly and he really let him have it. And so I saw that side of him as well. I was like, shit, I never want to piss gunny off. And working there in the office, and all of a sudden I hear this, Walsh, get over here. I'm like, oh fuck, what did I do? Like, what did I fuck up that makes gunny yell at me over anybody else? So for anybody who doesn't like when you're gunnery sergeant, that's like your boss's boss coming down to yell at you, you know, like you must have fucked up at a magnificent level for them to even like be the one to call your name. So I'm like, fuck, what the fuck did I do that Gunny has to yell at me personally? And I sit down and Gunny's like, so you're trying to get an early discharge, huh? I was like, yes, Gunny. Like, I've got a once in a life. He's like, I don't want to hear it. He's like, You trying to get out of this shit, Walsh? Huh? It's like looking over your paperwork. And I'm like, fuck, man. Is he gonna fuck over my early discharge? And like, I was like, oh shit, maybe the sergeant told him about like that I threatened to go UA and shit like that. Like, fuck. And he's like, looked over your paperwork and what's this shit about the what is this fucking company? This fucking Freaks for You. That's what the company was called.
Yeah, that's such a Freaks bad for name.
You is the owner. Freaks for You. He's like, what is this shit, Walsh? You about to go into Germany and do some gay porn? Is that it? Is that what you're into, Walsh? You about to get shit on by some dude?
What? Yeah, I can see how you would take that though. Like anyone else hearing that name just out of the blue. Oh my God, what'd you say to him? You're like,
I mean, at that point, it took my hardest to like not laugh. But you know, it was obviously just a bit. He was interested in what the fuck I was doing, and so I had to explain that the company's name was terrible, but here's what it actually was. And that was actually the first time I had to explain to people that I was trying to talk about video games for a living, which was actually surprising. People were surprisingly interested and supportive of it.
Really? That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. Were they supportive of it? Because I know a lot of people are not.
Yeah. They were way more supportive than the civilian job I had at the time, which was I worked with a bunch of old white 50, 60, 70 year old dudes. So when they found out, they'd give me shit about casting, talking about Tetris all day.
Yeah,
because they didn't understand Pac-Man. Like anything else.
You gotta play competitive Pac-Man or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I, but yeah, the military was they're very supportive of it. So they thought it was. I mean, like ultimately, the military is full of like super nerdy dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of nerds in the military. Yeah. So that word kind of got around to a few people, and there was a lot of people who came up to me and asked me about it. So.
That's cool. One of the things I noticed about you, because you do mention nerdiness, one of the things I noticed on your at least Twitter profile is that you're interested in voice acting or have done voice acting. Tell me, that is not a good yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's okay. So again, I'm not much of a self-starter, but if there's something I'm passionate about, I will do some of it.
Yeah.
I discovered voice acting, which I'd always been passionate about. I just never fully realized it. Mm-hmm. And so because I'd done like I grew up with Warcraft 3, and so playing Dota with the Warcraft 3 voices, I grew up around those voices so much. So many of them are so iconic that I fell in love with the voice acting aspect of things. And I was doing, like impressions, and I could pull off like a lot of the Warcraft 3 impressions. And I never realized that I could transfer that into voice acting.
Yeah.
And I've never been the best actor, or rather, I shouldn't say I've never been the best actor. I've just never been involved in acting. I never took theater when I was in high school, mm-hmm. like anything like that. So it was a very, very foreign concept to me. But I have started to try and go down that route. It's something that I am pursuing more so as a hobby than as an actual, like I would like to obviously turn it into a job, but right now I treat it more as a hobby. And I'm just kind of like searching for those small successes, those small wins. And so I'm doing it. It's not going very well, to be honest. Cause
I was going to ask you if you've done anything that,
I've like done recent. A lot of auditioning, but I have yet to get a real gig, is how I would describe it. I wouldn't describe that anything that I get through my esports connections to be a real gig, because that's not like the real competition. And I have imposter syndrome when it comes to this quite a bit, right? Because both between my connections and like also because it's a talent business and coming from a talent industry, I totally understand people succeeding that aren't as good.
Yeah.
And so I really want to become good at it if I'm going to be successful. So I just haven't really, it hasn't been successful for me so far, but voice acting is also like incredibly competitive.
Yes.
For many, many reasons. Basically, it's like, you think about acting, which is already like a talent industry that is highly sought after. But then you take away all of the appearance requirements. Okay. So that means every dude, no matter if they're white, black, tall, short, like it doesn't matter. Like for that role, they probably have to have a certain kind of look.
Yeah.
So it narrows down the field a little bit, but with voice acting, as long as the voice is anywhere in the range that they're searching for, every single voice actor can give their own pitch on a character. And it also means that age is not a requirement in the slightest, right?
Location isn't as much of a requirement either. Like you have to audition it a lot of times in LA for like actors. You have to be in LA. A lot of voice actors don't need to be in LA. They can just especially when
Hollywood,
you hear
voice actresses talking about how they get aged out at like a certain age when they start getting into their 40s, 50s, there's not as many roles or anything like that. Well, you know, you've got Mark Hamill who's still working as a voice actor and he is able to play every single character. Yep. So it's at some point in time, you are competing. Like I'm not at that level yet. Yeah. Obviously, the projects I'm competing with people who are aspiring voice actors like me. But it like at every single level, like the competition just gets tougher and tougher and tougher because every single voice actor can take that job, you know, as long as they are anywhere within the range that you're searching for. You know, if they have played a villain, they can go for this villain. If they have played a child, they can go and audition for this child. You know, it's crazy competitive. And so,
The reason I wanted to bring up is because like esports, like I think people always look at like esports, like how competitive it is, especially like nowadays comparative to like years ago. I think it just keeps getting harder. The way that the entertainment industry does, but when you're going for something like voice act, I feel like they're on different scales. Like anyone who thinks esports is difficult, which it is relatively speaking to maybe other things, but comparative to like, I think voice acting or like Hollywood entertainment, they're just on completely different levels. And for me, that's something I've always said is like my end goal of where I want to be to doing interview isn't esports. Like that's good. That's a good spot, but that's not you are the best interviewer. That is, you might be the best interviewer in esports or host in esports. The real challenge is when you get to entertainment. And if you can make it there, then that is where I feel like that's, you can't get much higher than that once you get there.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I'm a very competitive person by nature. So it does drive me the fact that I know there are so many good people. At the same time, me having already having a very successful career is it also in some ways holds me back because I'm not a self-starter.
Yeah.
So in that regards, it's like, I don't need to go all in on this whole voice acting thing because I've got other things that I need to do. So right now, I'm just trying to treat it more as a hobby to keep myself from getting too discouraged.
That makes sense. Well, I've had you here for a long time. I don't even know. It's almost been 2 hours. We've done good. I've enjoyed our talk to you. Hopefully, you enjoyed being on the show. If you didn't, too bad. Yeah, you're already here. I do have one question for you. It's arguably the hardest question, though. It's actually the only question that I ask, I think, every single guest. Is having had the experience being on the show, if you could see anyone to be on the show, who would you like to see?
Okay, so I already had that person in mind.
Ooh.
Because I think it is perfect because you said you haven't done any other Dota. So Sir Action Slacks has a policy that he does not say no to podcasts.
Really?
He always says yes.
Wait. Dude, are you? I'm going to double check, but I think I've asked him.
Oh, really? Well, then
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm going to ask him again. I'm just going to say that you recommended him. I don't know if I did, but I know he's on the list. No, I did not. I have not asked him.
He's an incredibly interesting person. Yeah. Very entertaining. And he is also one of the most open talent that I know to doing podcasts and stuff. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing. Believe it or not, this has been the end of the interview. This is all the questions I have for you. If you want any shout outs, you're definitely more than happy to have them.
No, I'm good without shout outs.
Okay.
I figure if anybody's going to listen to 2 hours of me talk, then they're either interested enough, they can find it on their own, or they probably already know me.
That's fair. That being said, that's all I have for you. Thank you so much for giving me your time. I really appreciate it. For everyone out there, this has been the Minds of Media. I do have an interview next week happening with a CSGO talent. I need to double confirm it, but it should be happening next Wednesday, assuming that all happens. Otherwise, this has been the Minds Media. My name is Blake Panashevitz, and until next time, I hope you guys all have a wonderful day. Bye. Oh, hello there. I hope you enjoyed this video, so please make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on those notifications. Shout out to all my Patreons who support me. If you're looking to support me, you can find my Patreon at patreon.com/improvblake. You can also find me streaming throughout the week at twitch.tv/improvblake.